listening to the podcast of Always Forward, the church planting initiative of the Anglican Church in North America, helping plant gospel-centered, sacramental, missional churches. For more information and resources, please visit always-forward.com.
Fun conversation today with my friend Cameron Robinson. And I say fun kind of in quotation marks because we both, Cameron and I, as we've been talking about this, we're both looking forward to this conversation and recognize that it's one that has hot spots for some folks as well. And in that today, you can't see Cameron, but Cameron is black. And you can't see me either because you're on a podcast and I'm white. But we're both church planters in the Anglican tradition. And so we are brothers in Christ and brothers in this work. And we are jumping on here today to talk through that I want to hear more about what the implications of planting as a Black Anglican in America and in the American South is as well. And I want to learn how to be able to support Cameron and other African American planters in their work and to learn from them and to see how we can support them. This is two brothers talking together about church planting that we both love. So that's what this conversation is about. So welcome, Cameron, to the podcast. So glad
to be here with us. Thanks so much, man. I'm glad to be here. Yeah. So where do we start? Tell me where you want me to start.
Yeah. Okay. So first things first, right? Tell the folks a little bit where you are, what you're doing, what church are you planting? Tell them you're in the REC, right? Like unpack a little bit so that folks can get to know you.
Yeah, so my name is Father Cameron Robinson. I am the planting pastor here at Emmanuel Anglican Church in Spartanburg, South Carolina. We are a wonderful congregation, small congregation, about a year into actual worship. But I think before we even get started, I have to back up and give credit where credit is due. I am a fourth generation Reformed Episcopalian. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we really adopted the word Anglican. My people would say the Reformed Church or the Reformed Episcopal Church from late 1800s, right? And so this isn't in many ways new for me. The tradition is as old as my great grandparents. It is. It is old for me. And as such, a lot of this church planting work has been an attempt to form a hybridity of sorts, right? This modern approach to something that has been foundational for my people for a long, long time. And so as a church plant, I am an extension of the Diocese of the Southeast up here in the Upstate. Most of our churches are in the lower state of South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we sought out to create a space that had the strength of the diocese of the Reformed Episcopal Church, these 70 and 80 year old Black men and women who had made it through some of the most difficult times in American history and made it and thrived and created and secured the way for the next generation. That is foundational in our worship and much of the story of Black church, but particularly in the Reformed Episcopal Church, the Diocese of the Southeast. And so I'm tremendously honored to be able to extend that a bit here in Spartanburg. So that's where I come from. Jumping around a little bit, I got to the place of church planting by accident, just like I think many people's story will share. I look back over where I had served in the time prior to planting, and then I realized they were all church plants. I'd served in Village Church in Greenville. It was a church plant. I served at All Saints for a little bit before going to serve Holy Rock in Greenwood, which was not a church plant, but All Saints was a church plant. Prior to that, I had served as a curacy, or it served on a curacy in Winston-Salem at Christ Church in Winston-Salem under Ben Sharp. I was there for 2 years. And so I realized, I've been kind of being shaped by church planters this whole time. Right. So where we are is I'm at church plant, which isn't surprising. But yeah, so that's a little about who I am. I'm a dad of two and one on the way in January. My wife, Joy, is a nurse. Prior to planting, I was a teacher for 5 years. So education is close to my heart. Emmanuel here, we're a congregation of 36 right now, half and half adults and kids. We are about 80% African American. And we are becoming a church that I think surprises all of us in such wonderful and amazing ways. And so, yeah, that's where we are, man.
And when did Emmanuel start? When was the official launch date of Emmanuel?
Yeah, oh man, that's a great question because there's like three of them. So we started in the pandemic. So we started on Zoom, and I think that was November of 2020. And then we went like a full year on Zoom monthly, just kind of gathering support. But this last November was our first service. So we had our first like, and we were doing it on Thursday night. So we had our first like Advent service last, no, like last Advent. So this upcoming Advent is our anniversary, if you will. This will be
Year
our,
anniversary. Yeah,
yeah, man.
that's great. That's so
So
good.
yeah,
Oh,
lighting that
that's
first candle
fantastic.
is our first.
Yeah, that's good. For those of you who might be listening who don't know all of our language that we're using as well, the REC is the Reformed Episcopal Church and is and has been around since the 19th century, right?
Yes.
And is a part of the ACNA, the Anglican Church in North America as well. So it's a what's the proper term?
They would say
it's
a
part.
founding partner of the
A
Anglican Church.
founding partner, right? Yeah. So we're all in the ACNA umbrella
Correct.
together as well. So just for those of you who are listening who aren't familiar with the language, that's where that comes from. As we chatted a little over email and before we got started with the podcast today too, you know that what I told Cameron was as well is that it's sort of an it's an interesting interview for me, an interesting conversation for me because I have a lot of experience as a church planter and working with church planters. I have zero experience being a black church planter. I've never done that before. I don't have much experience working with black church planters either, because honestly, in the ACNA, we don't have many black church planters. As a general question in this, of how would you say, or would you say, I mean, how would the fact that you are an African American in the work of planting an Anglican church, how has your race, your ethnicity, how has that affected or impacted your work of church planting or your experience of church planting?
So I would say, how has my cultural background impacted the way I plant a church? Man, I think we are all a makeup of our experiences. And so what I bring to the table is this fusion of liturgy and culture. So in many ways, for me, it's not as brand new as it sounds, because I grew up in foot stomping Book of Common Prayer expression. And I think for me, one of the things that makes this not as terrifying is that to know globally the expression of Anglicanism looks like me
That's it.
much
That's right.
more
Yeah.
than it does, all within the province. And so the small home away from home, I guess I have, in comparison of, GAFCON within ACNA would be my diocese. And so seeing it as an extension of the diocese makes some of the challenges just church administration challenges, right? It
Yeah, right.
becomes some of the same things that I guess everyone engages. Outside of that, the things in particular, I would say I talk to other church planters. I have an amazing privilege of being a part of Cardia, with the Diocese of the Carolinas, and like talk just listening to other church planters talk. Like when I hear them reflect, I don't feel as crazy as I thought I was. Like I'm like, oh, so you're worried about this too. Okay, so it's not just this or that. So that ends up being, I think, off the jump. Man, I don't know the differences culturally, because church planting feels like church planting.
Yeah,
It
yep.
is how do you gather a group of people? Now, one of the things I will say, so first off, Emmanuel, when we started, like way before, so about 5 years, man, I've been writing down this place called Emmanuel. Like I said, I served at a lot of places. Okay, a lot of places. I served like two or three places. And often my family was one of few, if not the only, Black family. And so within the Anglican tradition, that is the hardest part. You can love your tradition, and outside of my diocese, you can be the only person who looks like you enjoying that tradition. So you have to do a lot of the same stuff you have to do in the workplace already. And I think that speaks to a lot of Black church planting. We already have to do this in every space. Mm-hmm. We're already always the other in every space, that to the point to where, you know, I've probably turned off some of the reflection in order to continue producing. So being one of the only, I started, you know, writing this place where nobody had to feel like they were the only in that room, be it older person, younger person, be it Black, be it white, be it Asian, be it whomever. You didn't have to feel like you were the only, be it single, be it married with kids, being married, choosing not to have kids. Like, I didn't want anybody to feel like they were the only person, because I had experienced that multiple times within this tradition that I love, again, outside of my home diocese.
I mean, and I guess put it in another way, it's sort of like, is planting as a Black planter different than planting from any other race or ethnicity? And what I hear you saying is, on one level, no. I mean, on one level, I think church planting in general is, is it probably 80% the same anywhere. And then 20%, in extreme, contextualization. And
perfect.
That depends on, right? Like, like wherever you're planting, white or Black, wherever geographical location and people group you're reaching, and there's a ton of contextualization. That's what I hear you saying too, is like, 80%, we can all talk the same language because we're just church planters wherever and whatever we are on that. And then there's the 20% of, all right, so then there's some contextualization for my area.
That's you took the word out of my mouth, man. I just wrote down, that's what I'm essentially saying, contextualization. So within that 20%, like, for example, communicating Anglican to Black folks has been, what is that? Like, that's always the first word, to the point that I created a handout. Like, what is Anglican? Like, Q&A. Like, are there any Black folks in Anglicanism? I had somebody ask me, so do y'all worship Jesus? I was like, come on. Yes. All right, like, absolutely. But I'm in the South, man, and in Spartanburg, I'm in Baptist land, right? So anything with a collar is intimidating, is alien, is all that stuff. And so, you know, you walk in as a Black man in a collar, it doesn't necessarily communicate Anglican. It could communicate AME, it could communicate, it can communicate all these things. And so I think that is one of the areas where it becomes different, is communicating to people what Anglicanism means. But I think one of the bigger challenges probably is, you know, Emmanuel is an accidental multi-ethnic church. And so, like, it wasn't part of the vision that I was talking about earlier in terms of, like, creating this space. Like, I thought that was going to be this extension of my diocese that was historically African-American, but also aware of something. I didn't know what it was going to be. And then we get here, and now we look around, and literally we're a multi-ethnic church. We're a congregation that is predominantly African-American, but we are a multi-ethnic congregation. And so I found, as a Black man, one of the challenges is being, like, keeping it 100 with my people, making sure to articulate the concerns and to lift the real concerns of the community I come from up in prayer during prayers of the people, or, like, even when it comes time to be an advocate for things, like being real with the needs of my community, and also realizing that within the congregation are multiple communities, multiple needs, multiple priorities. And I think balancing those things is a thing that I didn't know about prior to. Like, as a Black man living through or living the American experience, you become very sympathetic to the voices that don't have voice. And those voices go across, you know, every breakdown we could possibly have. As such, like, I think some people would plant and only be attuned to one particular need or one group. But I think with the gift of, it's a bad word to use, but the gift of navigating as a Black man through America has been, yo, I'm aware of what it means or what it looks like when someone has been silenced or is processing being silenced or is trying to figure out if their particular group is silenced and trying to give voice to it. And I found it to be a unifying factor. It's almost a way that draws people in because the gift of being the not majority group is that you get to understand how minorities navigate the world, and you get to speak in that language, and that language ends up being beyond the parameters of race, right? It's, yeah, I'm Black, but I also am not a part of the majority group in this way. My education might make me a part of the majority group. My socioeconomic status might make me a part in some sense of some group, right? That you break down. But I think growing up in the country, in the rural South, right? Like, it gives you a certain set of language that begins to translate across the board. And that has helped pastorally. I think it's helped kind of offset some of the challenges of being an Anglican in Baptist South, particularly a Black man in Baptist South. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you said a lot there, and I want to unpack some of that because it's really good. Let me back up to where something you mentioned just a couple minutes ago, where you talked about one of your first one of the first obstacles is explaining what Anglican means, because I'm in the South too, right? I live in Greensboro, North Carolina, right? And grew up in Eastern North Carolina, went to school at Chapel Hill, planted a church in Fayetteville, North Carolina, planted a church in Atlanta before we moved here. So I've spent most of my life in the Southeast. And it's really interesting because I hadn't really thought about it until you just said it right then, that even though I grew up in the Anglican church, I grew up in the Episcopal church, before the ACNA and such existed and such as well. But even thinking of my experience growing up outside of my own priests at my own church, the only people that I would ever see in collars would be Black people, because they were usually from an AME tradition or something like that. But I don't think I'd ever really processed through that until you just said that that was actually my experience growing up, apart from the priest that I knew so well from my own church. That was the only time I ever saw a collar. So what a different kind of experience being out in the community. So here's my question with it. How do you articulate what Anglican means when someone from the Black community asks you that question? Like, are there aspects of Anglicanism that resonate well within the Black community differently than in the majority community? How do you explain when someone says, what is Anglicanism? How do you answer that?
Yeah, I think so. I want to answer that question. I also want to expand beyond just within the Black community, because I think a part of planting a predominantly African-American church, or just planting a church with a Black pastor, changes the narrative, right? So the people who are drawn to Emmanuel are going to be drawn to multiple things, but one of which they ask the question, do I want a Black pastor? Or navigate through that, right? Like, so I think the people that are coming, I'm communicating to them that in many ways I start with, hey, you know, are you familiar? Have you ever been to a Methodist service? And they're like, yeah, because the United Methodist Church, as you know, is all through the South. And I'm like, all right. So I always joke. I say, we're like their uncle. essentially. So like, in many ways, you'll see a lot of similarity liturgically. I was like, or particularly if they're from Black churches, I was like, have you ever been to an AME service? And they're like, yeah, I've been to an AME service. All right. So I say, all right, so we're like their daddy. And so I'm always diving on this, because I have a friend who's an elder in the AME church, and we went through the liturgy. And it's like word for word, almost off in a few places. And so there are already so many liturgical spaces that people are used to. Or if you go to a funeral, often you're using our order because it's super familiar. So I would tell people, depending on the language they know, I would say, look, we're this perfect mold, if you will, between liturgical expression and Protestantism. Like, we are we're connected, which a lot of people I'm running into, man, this idea of accountability is a major selling point for them. And so to explain to them the diocese, to explain that I have a pastor and our congregation has a pastor and our bishop, in that, like, it's not just me out here congregationally by myself, but we're connected to this larger network of churches. The diocese often ends up being a place of comfort for them. Theologically, I fall back. Honestly, I just make it as simple as possible. Look, we're a Bible-believing congregation, a Christian congregation, who you'll see me wearing some different robes. They're definitely ancient robes, which you'll see me in a cassock and surplus with the stole on. Don't let that freak you out. You'll hear some opportunities for the congregation to respond in our liturgy. in call and response, but I don't often go farther than that until we're talking new members classes, because what folks have found as comfortable, they find the congregation comfortable, and I think they find the similarities comfortable, and they're okay with the spots that aren't similar. I grew up, I used to tell folks that our church was like a Black Baptist church with the Book of Common Prayer. When I was growing up, I was like, you're going to hear a lot of the same stuff, but when it's time to engage liturgically or start morning prayer, it's coming from the Book of Common Prayer. And that's where the general confession in my tradition, like, it's still one of the most moving things to hear 80-year-old say the general confession. So that's how I explain it.
What did you call it? You used a phrase earlier. It was like foot stomping liturgy or foot stomping prayer book. What was
So like like foot stomping worship, right? Like, that's where I come from, man. I come from like expressive and real close to Pentecostal. What's really interesting is the Church of God in Christ, an African-American Pentecostal congregation, like liturgically, like, so they have a bishop, they have a very similar form of governance with church polity, but like they're always in a collar, right? So our community, like my church, where I grew up across the street, was Calvary Church of God in Christ. And so to see vestments wasn't brand new at all. And so I just grabbed those places. I'm like, hey, where are you from? What's the big church around there? Church of God in Christ. All right. So you know when the bishop comes or when your elder is there, we're going to look similar in many ways. We're going to sing these songs. We're going to have scripture. You're used to this whole outline that the Baptist church stole anyway. you're used to all these things. Yeah. That's the similarity. And then when we dive into the new members course, that's where we bring out the 39 articles and kind of dive into the specifics of theology. But I have found in the churches that I've been in that are not predominantly African-American, predominantly white churches, it starts head and then works its way to heart. Like that's the that's the intro. Is like, we're going to start with these conversations of theology, which for some folks, for sure, that's what we dive into. But a lot of folks I found also start heart and then work their way to head. Like they want to know, one, this brand new word, is it a safe place? Are you like the big non-denominational church that I'm bringing all this church hurt from? And if not, like, what are the places? Where are the things that can provide security for me? And that's thus far, those have been the biggest selling points of the folks in our congregation. I think one was a prior Anglican, three prior Catholics, and the rest non-denominational. And so the prior Catholics were familiar in many ways with a lot of what we do. Of course, the prior Anglican was, but the rest are bringing to the table this diversity of experience. And so for me, I feel like, being Black is definitely a part of it, but I'm also explaining the alien of Anglicanism. Right. And that almost being the Tomac.
You know what I say? You know, usually when folks come up and say, well, what is Anglican anyway? You know, you're like,
well, I get it too.
And then, so I like to say this. I like to say, okay, so you familiar with George Washington? And they'll be like, well, of course, you know, be like, well, George Washington was an Anglican, right? And then I'll be have you read the book or maybe even seen the movie, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? And they'll be like, oh, yeah. I'll go, well, Aslan was an Anglican.
I think this is spot on, man. This is actually an amazing part of the conversation, because none of that would be, it's the cultural things, right? Like the things those are the differences. It's the culture of fodder, but we're saying the same thing.
That's right.
Like I say all the time, hey, so as a former teacher, I taught English and social studies. So when I was talking to one of our members who's a social studies teacher, I was like, all right, so you remember like when we won the war, right? Like those churches separated, they could no longer pledge allegiance to the Queen. So they then formed and became the Episcopal Church, right? Now, so we're sisters. We had a family disagreement, we split. And so it's the same stuff though. It's like that fodder. Where you're from.
Hey friends, wanted to let you know of our next CPTI, Church Planter Training Intensive. The next one is coming up January 30th through February 2nd here in Greensboro, North Carolina. You get to come to my home church here at the Cathedral at Church of the Redeemer. This training is truly an intensive for all the things you need to know to get started and get up and get ready and be well-equipped to step into the work of church planting. More information is available at our website, always-forward.com. You'll see a button up there at the top that says events. Click on the training intensive and you will find all the information that you need to register as well. But we hope that you'll join us for this sacramental, missional, gospel-centered time of church planter training, January 30th through February 2nd, Greensboro, North Carolina. Yeah, it's totally contextualization. Yeah, absolutely.
All day long.
And, you know, I love the phrase that you use, sort of a foot stomp in liturgy. Because when I was in college, one of the things I did when I was in college was for about 6 months, I attended a black church when I was in college. And this was 20 years ago, so I don't remember the name of it. But it was a Pentecostal church, and there were probably, maybe 500 or 600 people in the service. And there were maybe 4 white people. I mean, it was, and I really wanted a different church experience. Like I wanted to learn. I'd been in the Anglican church my whole life. That was, our church was 99% white, and liturgical. And, you know, as in college, I just wanted to learn more and experience more. And it was fascinating I just loved it. Right? Like I just loved being in there. I love the energy of it. And then the cultural things too were so fascinating. The service was probably 3 hours long, but then after going to a couple of the services, I realized that like a third of the people came in about 45 minutes late. Some of the people left early. And I remember one Sunday, I was so young, you know, I was maybe 18 or 19 and learning in a new place in a new environment. Yeah. And I remember one time they passed the offering plate in the service. The pastor was dancing at the front and there were drums in the choir. Like it was the whole thing. Right. And I'm looking around learning like, oh, whoa, this is a completely different place I've ever been in. Right. And so they passed the offering plate and he stops the music and he looks in the offering plate and he goes, really? he goes, that's it. And this guy, he was not a prosperity gospel guy. Like he was a Jesus preaching guy. Right. And he just goes, I know you are more generous than this. He goes, pass him again. And they pass those plates around again. I just remember going like, this is so far outside of my normal experience of church and culture. And I loved it. And it was so full of Jesus as well. Right. And it was just the Holy Spirit. I mean, it's just a fantastic experience, but just so culturally different as well.
And that ends up being because although your experience was great, I'm glad it was, there's a lot of folks who've grown up in churches like that. And ironically, I was at a funeral yesterday and it made me realize, some of this stuff is rural. Some of this stuff is, you kind of, I don't know where it comes from, but it's not just, my growth is realizing, the things that I grew up and thought were normative solely in black church, they're not. They are practices across the board. Mm. And so although your experience was positive, a lot of the folks that I run into stopped going to church because of those experiences, because of some of the manipulation, because of some of the emotional manipulations, the craziness that happened. And so again, the beauty of the Anglican church ends up being, hold on, we're not going to do, because even as a church, we build on the best parts of black church that we've experienced, but some of that mess we leave out. The practices that, and you have to also look historically, because the development of the black church was of necessity. It was not, it is not a institution that was like, oh, this would be great. We had no choice. And so historically we had to create these spaces. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as such, did the absolute best we could with creating what I believe is probably one of the most foundational and still strong institutions that has ever existed. But the downside to that is the exposure to the ways and operations of larger institutions that have been around for 2 centuries we didn't have. And so now, as we're of the generation who's been to school, who's been to graduate degrees, we see how whatever institution we work at or belong to operates. And we go, hold on, these are good practices that we need to bring into the church. So for Emmanuel, foundationally, we are bringing the spirit and energy of the black church in conversation with access to practices that some of the churches who just haven't seen it, They just don't know. And so, but that said, some of the pain that is caused from these churches who just don't know, and the kids grow up like, I don't like this. They then find Emmanuel, I would believe, as a place that is, oh, I still feel like home, but they aren't doing some of the mess that I don't think is unnecessary, that I think is unnecessary.
No, that's good. Yeah. No matter what community we're reaching into, that's the wonderfully restraining aspect of the liturgy, right? Like it's not, it doesn't squash the Holy Spirit or squelch the work of the Spirit. But it keeps us from an unfaithful innovation or getting so caught up in whatever our cultural norm is that we move outside of God's word and God's kingdom as our cultural norm as well. And the liturgy helps focus us in that way. I think that's great. Yeah. My experience at that church was great. And they weren't manipulative in the way they did it. Yes. But it's easy to see the experience that you're describing as well of if in the wrong hands,
for sure,
how that could be a very manipulative environment.
And as such, we've said at Emmanuel, begin again, because of that, like, hey, you're familiar with church, but for whatever reason you left, we want to be a space where you give this thing another shot, another try. That's great. And expose you to centuries of traditions that has existed that you may or may not have known has been around. I'm really hoping, man, there's a whole generation of my peers, the often cursed millennials, who are just done with prior expressions, man. And we're hoping to really be like, you don't have to be done, man. You do not have to be done. So, that's the hope, brother.
Yeah. Well, my role as canon for church planting for the ACNA is to really help church planting throughout North America, wherever I can, and work closely with canons for church planting of their diocese and such as well. And I would love to see more African American planters within our tradition and in our movement, and more African Americans in general as well, as well as other races and ethnicities and cultural backgrounds as well. But just as we're talking, as someone who's a church planting leader, are there ways that I can help with that? Like, what do I need to know as a church planting leader to be able to say, are there ways that we can encourage, as you said, sort of your people and your generation? How can we help? What can we learn?
Yeah, I think so. The answer I'm about to provide, I think, you know, it's going to be we can do this conversationally. Part of it is leadership, man. Every time I go, I would. So there's a period of time where we were just kind of attending different churches, and I'm always looking at the leadership page. I want to know who's in leadership, and I want to know what they look like, because if nobody looks like me, I'm going back into the same space I've always been in of being the only in that crowd. And I'm not going to do that. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I thank God for the photos from GAFCON. Because like, I'm probably the only view, I'm probably that view that keeps ticking up like every week on that photo album, because man, like, yo, to see that picture of Bishop still to this day is one of the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen. Like, that's why I love our tradition. If that could be every church's about me page or whatever, and I know it's not right now, but that should be the goal. Of where are people different from me? So like, for example, as a theological seminary, this ITC in Atlanta, right? That is traditionally a Black seminary. There's no reason our church should not be there on denominational days where we're saying, hey, we are looking for people. As a matter of fact, we have funded curacies, putting the money behind it. I know ACNA is young. I know funding is a thing for every church in every era. But if you really want it, then you have to fund it like all day long. And you have to fund it in a way that, from the rural South, the idea of if you give a pastor, you know, you feed him dinner or you give him some chicken or something like that, right? That's their pay. Nobody that is a peer of mine that's coming out with a bachelor's degree and a master's degree and is going to pursue employment that doesn't provide a sustainable living for their family. Right. So we've got to package these things. We've got to do the fundraising. We've got to be serious with it. But then I think we also have to not just put people out there and say, all right, person of a Black guy, you know, 30, young family, go plant by yourself. We have to figure out what it means to support them. And like I said, I'm a part of a church planting group. 80% of the things I talk about, the other people understand. That other 20%, we have to figure out who those mentors are, and that will probably be outside of the Anglican Communion. Now, when Emmanuel, Lord willing, is doing really well, and we have a curacy here, and you can send somebody here, and it's a funded position, and we can build that person up and say, this is what it looks like to work within this tradition and gain that experience, that'll be great. But until then, we might need to identify the churches that are either predominantly whatever demographic you're looking for, place that funded curacy in that place, and then supplement the liturgical training. As a canon, I think it is being super creative, realizing that the vision we have for our province might not start in our province. We're probably going to have to go outside of it, because you can teach the liturgical component of it, but contextualization, Black churches, Hispanic churches, Asian churches, white churches, they're already doing that. We then bring them on and teach the liturgical component. Yeah. What do you think about that? How's it sound?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, what you described too of just a church planter community, where, like you said, that it being a part of Cardia, that, that 80% of what you're talking about, they can all relate with as well. You know, that's one of the reasons why I love the Always Forward Conference every year, is that the greatest compliment we'd ever gotten about the Always Forward Conference was that, was one time when a church planter was there and he was leaving, he said, Dan, this is why I look forward to this every year, 'cause these are my people. Like they finish my sentences,
they get it.
Right? I don't have to explain what an Anglican is. Nobody called me Anglican, and I don't have to explain why am I church planting. And I don't have to explain any of that. And we can just be here and speak the same language. And, you know, that's why the thing that I know that I've been saying now for 6 years or so, that that we just keep repeating and will for as long as I'm in this position, at least, that we just want to tell church planters, you're not alone. You're doing this together. And I just want to continue to see that church planter family that we are developing on a provincial level and within the diocese as well. I really long for that to continue to increase in diversity, because it still is primarily white. I mean, it's primarily Caucasian. So
yeah, I would say too, like foundationally, we've got to, because I mean, I don't think ACNA realizes it, but even in language, we communicate we're predominantly white. We communicate so often, hey, what does it feel like to be a minority in the ACNA? And like my counter is always like, globally, I'm not, right? And so think about that as a welcoming phrase, right? Yep. The idea of, hey, we're welcoming you into this province so that the province can look like the rest of the globe, versus we're welcoming you, unicorn, into this space, right? But like, I want the province, I need the province to start looking at diversity, just like Black friends. You can't, if you don't have any Black friends, stop trying to do work in diversity. Right. Go sit down and have dinner. Like, learn what it means to exist within someone's cultural context and understand those cultural cues. And if we really spend enough time there, like really trying to be in communion with people who want to be in communion with us. And I think it only flows from there, because what I've found is that people who are like me or unlike me, or even who look like me and have completely different sets of priorities, but they choose to stick around the church, it's because I have a genuine relationship with them. I know them. They know me. They know my quirks. I know their quirks. And I'm like, bro, look, just come on. Like, in being open to sensitivities that I don't understand, there are things about other cultures that I just don't get, because it's not a big deal in my culture. But I can have, I heard someone say once, compassionate curiosity. Like, I can genuinely care. And that's the posture that I think sometimes is missing. In addition to funding something, care, man. Yeah. Like, care, because there will be that time, particularly in the Black American experience, where that 20% feels like 90. And that's been like the last 2 years. Right. But when I get to the actual work of church planting, that 80% is similar across the board. I just need you to be available so that when that 20% is super loud, it is the loudest thing on the table. I know that people care on the other side of the phone versus go, you're just making that up. No, care, man. Yeah. If you can care, then I can be a part of this place to help it look like my diocese and the rest of the globe. If you can't care, I already have that Monday through Friday. I don't need the same experience from corporate America in the church.
Right.
And that's where I think the province has some that we can grow in. Like, care, really care. Don't do lip service. Don't put out just something that sounds right and is trying to teeter the line between upsetting this group of people and upsetting that group of people. I want an email, a video that shows me, oh, you care about my experience. I understand that there's a lot, again, that 80%, that is that 80%. I'm not asking you for to ignore all the things we have in common, but I am asking you to care enough about our differences to make this a space that really does not feel like you're shouting the whole time. You're not majority. And that's what keeps often.
Yeah, no, I hear that. And you know, I mean, is one of the reasons why I reached out to you to want to have this conversation with you on the podcast as well. I mean, is for us to be able to publicly have this kind of conversation, to be able to do the hard work of learning, because I'm learning how, I think what you just said as well too, of like being, of learning people's sensitivities as well. I mean, like what language do we use that's accidentally insensitive in some way or another? Like without having these sort of conversations, there's no kind of mirror to be able to look and go, okay, I totally get that. And let's come together on the basis of what you just said, like, let's just first care about each other and first love each other and then work out the details after that in a certain sense.
And let me add to that just a bit, because love is subjective, right? Like the idea of, oh, let's just love you, that it becomes super subjective. I would say, man, the best thing I can say, I run into people all the time, right? And there are some people that are just easy to be around. And then there are some people who are just like so scared and it's like, calm down. But I've run into like some of the coolest white guys I've run into. These brothers, like, it's just something about them that they're not tripping. This, I'm not the first black person they've seen. I'm not the first conversation. And they're so chill to the point that if they say something off wall or off kilter, I can say, now look, man, bruh, chill.
Right? Like, right. Yeah. Right.
I can say it. I can call it. And it's not the end of the relationship. Right. It's like, oh, okay. Yo, my bad. And we keep moving along. I think a lot of this stuff is we've got to do the work of identifying the areas that are biases for us that are we're aware of, we're not aware of, and just operate with grace, and that same grace returns to us. We're just so afraid right now of being real to the point that we never grow. And because we never grow, we can then never extend our community, like extend the reaches of our community. Be real. We try to do that here at Emmanuel. We try and have like real conversations. After, you know, it was a public travesty, we came together and there were tears shed and there were shouts. Yeah. Like we were angry. We were upset. We were like broken. We were just like, why does this keep happening? And that room, really heard each other from different perspectives. And there was, we walked away with this just ability to care. Man, that's my hope.
Yeah. Again, I wanted to be able to spend this time with you on the podcast to be able to even publicly begin these conversations.
For sure.
And again, sort of learn and learn the right vocabulary and learn how to interact well, and not because you're the first black person that I've ever seen. But it is harder to know how, let me say it this way. Like, I work for the province. I don't speak for the province, right? And where I've seen horrible interactions on the lines of race and these kind of discussions are in, you know, online conversations and such that are within discussion groups and things like that. And it's just the fact that the ACNA is attached, even informally in name to those things. I kind of feel like this is not my people, right? Like this is not my people.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the ACNA is not my people. I'm saying there's a public, like the corners of the internet where these things happen.
Oh,
under that
for sure.
Name. And so how do you then, how do you have really good public discourse about these things, and how do we learn? I just want you to know, like, just you and me, just Dan and Cameron, and we'll forget everybody else is listening, right? I mean, to be able to say, like, I do care, and I want to learn how to care more, and I want to have more conversations, and I just I I want to be in this, and I know that I've got a lot of learning.
But Dan, I think that's it. So what Dan and Cam talking right now, right? Like the way you do that, man, don't worry about vocabulary. Don't worry about any of that stuff, right? Just be you and talk. And if you have a question, ask it, right? I often have that same thing. Like I often go, yo, I wonder how my white brothers and sisters experience X, Y, and Z. Cause like, I know it's not how I experience it. The people online are not our brothers. Well, they are our brothers and sisters. They're not my people. We don't represent the same people. We don't come from the same cloth. The folks who are my people have a place in my heart. Because they're kind and we have real conversations. I think that mess online leads people to be super timid. They're afraid to say the wrong thing. They're afraid to, but there's something about knowing somebody's heart and then going, yeah, I know what they said, but I've met them. And I think I would just challenge us all to keep attempting to meet people maybe. And that starts to change the game. I'm sure there's a lot of smart, more intelligent people who could tell you all day long, well, you need to read this and do this. And it comes from all that mess.
Yeah.
But as a church planter, you and I know relationships are one-to-one quite often.
Right.
And that's what I build upon. Just with Cameron, you have permission to be you. And I'll tell you, and that's what I think is the other side of this amazing thing called friendship that people should develop. Is that if you say something off the wall or I say something off the wall, we have this mutual understanding that we are going to call each other on it, forgive, and keep moving. And I think that's happening. The beauty of ACNA, I see that happening a lot on smaller scales. It's just not happening on that page you're talking about.
Right. Well, like, I mean, I think the thing that needs to be named, right, is that how conversations go in general, regardless of who is in the conversation, is largely dictated by cultural norms and expectations, right? If we're in the South, right, and we go, how you doing? Then somebody goes, I'm fine, right? I mean, that's sort of the expectation of what you hear. There's just ways, and any culture has those sort of things. And because there's such a because there's such a variety of ways these conversations about race have gone, or between a black man and a white man have gone as well. There's sort of a question. One of the things that makes it sometimes awkward, right, is like, what are the proper cultural norms in this? Like, what is the expectation? What can I say? What can't I say? What and I love what you're saying in this too. I mean, like, that's why it just comes back to I want to be your friend. Like, I like you, right? I like Cam, and I just want to be able to sit in the room with you and drink whatever frosty beverages we want to drink at the time, you know, and have this conversation. And like you said, it begins with that friendship, and you start to kind of work through those. All right, this is how we have these conversations. But I think that's why some of these conversations don't happen, is because you're in a vulnerable space to just be able to be willing to have the conversation because they're aren't clear cultural expectations. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I would encourage anybody listening. We've used 80-20 a lot on this call, right? Like 80% of the work I do, everybody can kind of relate to as a church planner. Yeah. I would say probably, you know, if we're going to engage in real conversation, it needs to be like 60-40, meaning don't spend 100% on it. Like, oh, you're black. Let's just talk about that. Yeah. Because the other things that I bring to the table, then we start to minimize our similarities, and we start to minimize the abilities of black folks, because then you become the black church planter as opposed to the church planter. Right. And, I could easily see somebody going, oh, well, you're minimizing your cultural significance. Nah, not at all. It completely influences everything I do. It influences what seasoning I put on my chicken. It influences where I go and what I have for Thanksgiving. And it also influences how I worship. But at the same time, the thing I found as the greatest asset to growth has been like this appreciation for what's different between us, and spending just as much time being asked about my experience as I do asking others. And I don't think we do that a lot, particularly now. And I understand, you know, people said, if this house is on fire, that's the one that gets the water. I completely, you know, agree with that. I just think if we're going to have real conversations, we cannot engage people solely as a black representative or as a white representative. We've got to engage people, man. Like, we've got to engage the wholeness of that person. And I could then really see like true growth happening, because now you're not just calling me, oh, you're a Black man or you're a woman, I want to get your perspective. Nah, you're calling me because you understand all these things impact and have shaped me. And I really see our province growing in that way when it's like heart language as opposed to, this other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think you're saying, by the way.
Yeah. And well, like I said, just know that that for whatever role I have in representing Always Forward and through Always Forward, the parts of the province that I know well, also, I mean, just hear me say that, like, I really want to do everything I can to make sure that there are these spaces for more of these conversations to happen and more relationships to form. I mean, just
for sure.
It's like you said, I mean, church planters can sniff out church planters, right?
You
can
sure.
be in the room with somebody, even if you didn't know they were a church planter, and then you're in the room with them, you could be like, have you planted a church before? I mean, there's just something about that. And I mean, even the first couple of minutes that we're on a call together for the first time, going like, right, like this is my people, right? This
yeah,
is I can finish your sentence, you can finish mine. We know where we're coming from on that. And that's one of the reasons why I think church planting can actually be a unifying force in so many ways, because we actually transcend a lot of places of political controversy and gender controversy and a lot of that. We just sort of can step out a lot of those places and go, what we speak the language of church planting together and mission together and missional Anglicanism together.
Exactly.
And that's a common language that we have no matter who we are in that.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. I like, as you were talking, I see the image of us like working together often. And maybe that's what the problem is. When we start talking, we stop working. And maybe the work that we do together is the unifying force, right? One of the things I love about procession at a diocesan synod, like synodical council, is that I look around and these guys who are walking in with me, they all do the same thing I do on Sunday. And so I'm not by myself on Sunday. And to see other church planters, yo, you're afraid too that the people won't come, or you're afraid as well, or you're about to have your first vestry meeting as well, and you have no idea what you're doing. I just find so much comfort in that. And maybe, you know, the place of unity is around the work, man. Like, yeah, I'm different, and I'm different in the way I approach it because of my cultural context, but the work is the same. And this wonderful gift of pastoring people is the same, because they all have problems, right? And so I see that as the difference. And sometimes I think the invitation is to see people holistically. And I really see us moving forward when we value the input of one, not solely because of their difference, but because of the commonality of the work and the commonality of the call. That's exciting.
So how do you balance that, though, of like I care about your perspective simply as a church planter, but I'm also interested in the fact of like, does the fact that it is your experience as a Black church planter, what difference in perspective does that bring, or you know, or does it, like, to be able to say, like, I mean, even Esau's book, right, of reading while Black is saying, like, there's a being Black affects our process of reading and our perception and how it affects us and the cultural aspects of that. So how do we not be in an awkward place of being like, yes, on one hand, I want to hear just you as a great church planter. I want to hear about it. But then I also want to specifically go, tell me what that's like being Black doing that. And
yeah, you know, sometimes I think that question is like a bishop's question, right? And here's what I mean by that. Esau's book wasn't written for me, right? Like, I remember popping open the cover and I was like, oh yeah, my whole life, like, this is
I already know this.
Yeah, like, it's like reading it, it's like, oh, like, well, he wrote us, like, okay. So Esau's, it wasn't written for me, it was written for people interested in my experience who had never lived it. And I think for me, the challenge is, like, so one, you know, you have a podcast or you have a speaking series or whatever, and you're like, we need to get some diversity on this board, right? And I understand that as a thing that is valuable and is necessary, but I think the intent of it is what's important. So speaking like, you know, just in general, when people are thinking, well, what does that look like? I would say it's, if the intent of it is to diversify the panel, then I'd say it's wrong. If the intent is to recognize out loud that this panel is never complete, void of these other voices, then that's different. And I think that posture changes the way in which we even engage people. Like, it's incomplete without voices from various backgrounds. It's not full. It's just a very small experience that these people in this room agree with. And I would argue, as a Black man, Cameron can say, I've been in spaces where I realize I'm here so that the picture of this place looks diverse. I've also been in spaces where I'm here because Cameron is valued. Now, does it hurt that Cameron is different? It absolutely doesn't hurt, because it makes the efficiency of that organization that much better, because the people who align with my experience are represented here. I think it's posture. And I'd argue that anybody who represents a non-white group can sniff that out a mile away. They know when this is a place that is really seeking to represent the community they serve at large well, and they know when it's a token. And I think as the church, it goes back to relationship, right? Like, I think that's a hard thing, though, because what people find is that, all right, if I want to do this well and I want to have relationship, I want my connections to stem from relationship. They go, but I don't have those relationships, which is why I would say at large, you got to start with, all right, who do you know in these areas? Yeah. Like, who do you know? And are they naturally a part of your people group? Say it all day long. You don't know no Black people. Probably ain't gonna have one on your staff. Probably shouldn't have one on your staff. And they might not come to the church. So you might want to start with doing that. And I would also say that's the normative posture of many in the Black community, is that we have to walk into spaces as minorities and have to establish these relationships. Because if we solely chose only relationships with people like us, there's nobody quite often in our workspaces. There's nobody quite often in the places we take our kids, or unless we choose a predominantly Black community. If we're in Charlotte, if we're in Greenville, if we're in Spartanburg, these are places where African-Americans outside of the city, you know, it's not dense in terms of population. And so we're used to going into spaces as minorities and having to at least establish surface level relationships. I don't think that's the same for others. I don't think that's the same often for the white community. There are some people who put themselves in that posture as a normative one. But I would even say, I think it's really important for us to get to the place where we see each other as valuable and we make space, because without that other person's voice, that space is incomplete. And until we have established that as our true heart posture, the rest of it is just, it just looks good.
Well, and I think a parallel with that, I mean, one of the things that we're learning here at my church in Greensboro as well, I'm the dean of the cathedral at Redeemer Church in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we have two international services in the afternoon. We have an East African service that's largely Rwandan. They speak in Swahili and sometimes in Kinyarwandan as well, and a South Sudanese service as well that they speak in Arabic. And so but South Sudan is mostly Black as well. So when we say Arabic, some people think like Middle Eastern, but that it's so. And so one of the things that we're trying to do the hard work from an international standpoint of like, it's one thing to go, we're going to have a service and have it in the afternoon and East Africans can come to it. It's another thing to say, how are we the same church? To value the morning services that we have that are primarily Caucasian, not completely, but primarily Caucasian, and equally value the voices of those in the afternoon international services, and the cultures are different and the customs are different. And so how do we not just have an isolated space, or use it as sort of like optics on the website, yeah. right? But how do we integrate their leaders in with our staff so there isn't a their leaders and our leaders? There's an the leaders of Redeemer, and man, it's hard work. Like it's really hard work because there's a lot of differences and barriers and assumptions that we have to go. Oh, I'm making assumptions I didn't know that I had, and but we're entering into it. You know, like we're in, and so I think that's from a global standpoint. But what we're talking about is the same thing of just like. I want to even more enter into these conversations of like, I'm willing to risk being awkward, or I'm willing to risk being like, what is it? I don't know if I'm doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing. And to have even someone else go, stop worrying about whether you're doing the things that you're supposed to do or not. Like, we just have to be kind of willing to be in that vulnerable space and go, let's drink beer together and talk church planting. And that's where it starts. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely, man. And you know, I feel like I have to say there are some people who need to worry about the things that they're saying, especially if people around them keep going, hey, you shouldn't say that. Because I know the audience of this podcast is wide. So there's some people listen, if you've been reported on social media a couple of times for things you've said, you probably should chill a little.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I'm thankful for our time. I know that we have to kind of wrap it up. So oftentimes I wish these podcasts go like for 3 hours. But we kind of have to bring it to a close. But honestly, like, I just have enjoyed sharing a digital space with you anyway. That I know the people on the podcast can't see. Cameron and I can see each other through the software that we use to be able to record and stuff. So we actually get to kind of look each other in the eye, and you guys are listening on in your cars, wherever else, can't see us. But we've gotten to share a little bit of eye contact then in this too, sort of be in the same digital space. And I just really enjoy being with you, Cam, and really do. I just want. I hope that in whatever platform I have, to model it, just trying to be vulnerable in that space of going, I love you as a church planter. Like, I love the work you're doing. I love talking with you. And I just like enjoying spending time with you. And I value your specific perspective as well, that you also bring as being a Black person in that, as well, that challenges me and my assumptions as well. And so I'm just thankful for this time. And do hope that we can continue to have these conversations. Sometimes I'm down in South Carolina. I'm going to come down your way and see you as well.
Come through, man. Come through. Sundays at 9:30. I feel like this is a plug for Emmanuel Anglican Church. You are invited to our services beginning at 9:30 a.m.
Yeah, man. That's great. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, my brother, and my fellow church planter, my people, as well. In you,
absolutely, Cameron. Man.
Thank you for your time as well, and for all you church planters out there, I pray that you're engaging in these conversations too. Like, I just, I join Cameron in hoping that that as we see pictures from GAFCON, that they become even more that our province becomes even more similar to them on a day-to-day basis. And so so Always Forward wants to be a part of that. I want to be a part of that as well, and we're doing this work together.
Amen.
Okay. Amen. All right. Thanks, Cameron, again. And listeners, we'll be back again in the next couple of weeks anyway, with another episode for you of the Always Forward podcast. And as we try to say to you all the time, we've even reminded in this time together with Cam as well, is as you're out doing this work, no matter where you are, as isolating as church planting can feel, we just want you to know that as Anglicans, as Black Anglicans, as white Anglicans, just as Anglicans, you're not alone. You're not alone. We're a family in this in so many ways. So bless you. We love you. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Always Forward podcast. Visit us at www.always-forward.com for more resources, to submit your questions, or to interact with us. See you next time.